So, hello everyone. I am Siri Vaith, Executive Director of the Cystic Fibrosis Research Institute, CFRI, and I welcome you to what promises to be a very informative and inspiring webinar on colon cancer and cystic fibrosis. March, it is March, is Colon Cancer Awareness Month, and it is known that individuals with CF have 5 to 10 times the rates of colon cancer pre-transplant as the general population. For those who have had a transplant, the rates soar to 25 to 30 times greater than the general population. And carriers, which would include, you know, one out of approximately 33 people in the US, have twice the rates of colon cancer as the general population. What's been really frightening is that colon cancer rates among young people are increasing dramatically. And 1 in 5 new cases of colorectal cancer in the US occur in people younger than 55. And I think because many physicians are not, you know, recognizing in younger people that this is a possibility, sadly, once diagnosed, typically the stage is much more advanced. Colon cancer is preventable. And today we'll talk about the importance of early screening for prevention. For years, the recommended age for a first colonoscopy for the general population was 50, while the recommended age for people with CF due to the increased risk was 40, and that was 30 for people post-transplant. Due to the increasing occurrence of colon cancer among young people, the recommended age for the general population is now 45. And yet for those with CF, the recommended age of 40 has not changed. So it really is up to us to advocate for ourselves and our loved ones to seek earlier screening. Our guests today will discuss their personal experiences with colon cancer, and I will introduce them in a moment. But before that, I want to remind people the information presented in this webinar should not be used for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And before making any changes in your care, you should consult with your health management team. I want to also thank our sponsors who've made this podcast possible, including Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Gilead Sciences, and Viatris. And the last final housekeeping, you can ask your questions in the Q&A box. This is being recorded. It will be available immediately on Facebook and then later on our YouTube and Podbean channels. Done with all that. Now to the panel. With us today, we have Anna Payne, Thomas Horal, and Elise Elkonen-Goldberg. Welcome and thank you for your willingness to share your experiences with us. So why don't we start with self-introductions, including your colon cancer connection or journey. Anna, why don't you start?
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Anna Payne. I was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis at birth. I use the pronoun she, her. I'll do a little visual description. I am wearing royal blue, which is the color blazer, but it is the color for colon cancer. So, and since it's Colon Cancer Awareness Month in March, I wanted to make sure I represented with our royal blue color. And I'm sitting in my office, and in the background, there's a picture of the Little Mermaid puzzle that I did, which is very good, by the way, just in case anyone wanted to know. And I live in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I'm 37 years old, and I live with stage 4 colon cancer, which I was diagnosed with in July of 2021. I didn't have any family history. My only predisposition was having cystic fibrosis. So I'll pass it off to somebody else. And get...
Thomas, you want to jump in?
Yes, I will go. Hi, I'm Thomas Horal. I was diagnosed with CF when I was only 5 years old. I live in San Jose, California. I currently have short brown hair. I'm wearing my rose t-shirt to represent 65 roses. Also in sweats because I'm home. I am currently in my studio slash kitchen bedroom area sitting on my bed. I was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer when I was 30. I am now 31. Last year, I was diagnosed. I have no family history of colon cancer. We have other various cancers within our family, but not colon as far as we know. And I think that's about it for introduction for me.
Elise.
Hi, everyone. My name is Elise Selkonen-Goldberg. I was diagnosed when I was 3 years old with cystic fibrosis, and I just recently celebrated my 65th birthday. I am webinaring from Los Gatos, California, and I am in my office. I have shoulder-length brown hair and wear glasses, and I welcome everybody. My connection with colon cancer, I am hugely grateful that I do not have colon cancer. However, my younger brother, who was a CF carrier, he passed away from colon cancer. Fortunately, I had GI issues that started very young in my life. It was in my late 20s that I started getting colonoscopies. And I was told by a gastroenterologist about 15 years ago that if I hadn't started getting colonoscopies as young as I did, I most likely would have died of colon cancer. And he was very insistent about the fact that I have the gene for colon cancer.
Thank you. Let's see, Anna and Thomas, before you were diagnosed, did your doctors, any of your doctors, ever talk to you about CF and colon cancer?
I'll start. Unfortunately, in my case, I didn't have any discussions with my doctors at all about the CF and colonoscopies or colon cancer. I don't know if it's just because of my age or because I was been so, thankfully healthy up until more recently. But yeah, I unfortunately did not get a chance to have any discussions with my doctors before I was diagnosed. So,
Anna?
I had been made aware that we needed to start getting screened earlier at age 40, but that was really the extent of their conversations. And I really feel like I was made aware of that because a friend of mine who also had CF, who is a little older than me, was talking about this in like 2016-ish about how they just created these guidelines and were recommending that folks get screened at 40. So I kind of already knew that, but I was only 34. So like 40, you know, seems very far away. I think, especially when we have CF, we kind of live one day at a time, one step at a time, one year at a time. So like 40 sounded very far away. From even 34, right, when I got diagnosed. My doctors didn't really have a conversation. I think I brought it up to them and they were like, yeah, when you turn 40, we'll make sure you can get screened. And that was kind of where it was left.
And Anna, can you share a bit about how you were diagnosed with colon cancer?
Sure, I don't know how long the webinar is, but so I wasn't diagnosed via colonoscopy. I didn't even get a colonoscopy until they were looking for the buried treasure, aka the cancer. And I had some digestive symptoms in May of 2021 that I thought were kind of weird, but I also just thought I was very busy and maybe I just like forgot to take enzymes. You know, I think it becomes so automatic that like when you try and think about it, you're like, did I do it? Did I not? Maybe I'll take extra. Is that extra or the same? Like, you know, this little mind thing that I'm sure I'm not the only one, or at least I'm not, I hope I'm not the only one that has happened to. So at first I thought it was something like that. And then I kind of realized they weren't subsiding per se. So I did like reach out to my CF center, like inquiring about getting a colonoscopy and how we would go about doing that. I wanted to be on the safe side. And they were like, well, because you're under, you know, 40 or at 40, it literally changed the week I was on vacation. So like a week later, they, from, you know, moved it from 50 to 45, that it wouldn't be like an overnight thing and they'd have to find a GI and make sure the insurance would pay for it. But they were willing to try and figure out, you know, work on it. Again, I didn't think it was like an urgent, needed to be done right now situation. I went on vacation for like maybe a week, 10 days. And I knew in the back of my head, I was like, well, I don't know what this is, but whatever it is, it's still gonna be wrong with me when I get back from vacation, whatever. By then I had developed a dime-sized mass in my groin. that I noticed when I came back from vacation in June. And I thought that was weird because it was. And I took it to the OBGYN because that seemed like their territory. And they ordered an ultrasound. We did that. Came back like, oh, seems like a cyst or nothing to really be concerned about. And I thought, okie dokie. In the meantime, I contacted my CF team again about trying to get the ball rolling and like saying that I felt like I was like having like constipation or like very bloated. And like my stomach didn't hurt. It wasn't like in pain, but it was just like, this doesn't feel normal. Like, so they ordered an X-ray to see if I had diodes, which I did. I did. So we did some colon cleanses at home. But what we didn't know is that it was never going to get better because you're never going to be able to excrete a tumor. And an X-ray doesn't really show that it's necessarily a tumor, right? It just shows that there's something there. In the meantime, the mass went from the size of a dime to the size of like a golf ball within a couple weeks. And that's kind of when I knew like, well, this isn't normal. I went to see a general surgeon about the golf ball. He didn't know what it was either. He had ordered a CAT scan and this is, you know, had to wait 2 weeks to get a CAT scan. My CF team, I reached back out to them about the, you know, we did another colon cleanse because I still felt like, rightfully so, that it didn't fix everything. And I started to just like not feel good. And like my instincts kicked in and was like, this is not enough. Like you need to do more. And I reached out to my CF doctor, told him that I was waiting for this CAT scan, but I couldn't wait any longer. He had me admitted to the ER so I could get the CAT scan. The CAT scan, nobody knew. They took a lot of pictures of my golf ball and they could never really figure out what was going on. I spent 4 days in the hospital just waiting to get the golf ball biopsied. By the time it was biopsy time, a team of doctors came in and they were basically like, you definitely have cancer. We just really don't know what kind. And that's kind of how it started. So once the biopsy came back, it came back primary colon. Obviously, stage four, because it had spread outside of my colon to both of my ovaries. The golf ball was one of my ovaries. And 10 plus-ish lesions on my liver, my stomach lining. So it was lymph nodes. It was having some sort of party. I don't know who the bouncer was for the party, but he clearly clocked out early. And the cancer was just, you know, having a very good time. And nothing was really stopping it from spreading. So I had to start over, right? I had to go in reverse, pun intended, and get a colonoscopy to find out what part of my colon the cancer was in per se and get a biopsy. And then I had to get a port put in. I didn't have a port. I had to get a port put in. I started immunotherapy. That did not work. My CF was actually the reason that they thought I would be a candidate. But the piece of the tumor they tested had the defective CFTR protein in it, it threw the test off. So they thought I would be eligible for immunotherapy. So I started that. And that really was just like miracle grow for the cancer. Because it did not work. And I stayed on that for 6 weeks until I realized it wasn't working. And then we had to do a scan and the whole thing. And I started chemo after that. But I think, like I said, I don't know how long this webinar is, so I'm going to stop there. But yeah.
Thank you, Anna. And I am, every time I hear this story, it just chills me. I'm so sorry you're going through this. So I'm going to ask Thomas to also share his journey. One thing I will say, questions in the Q&A box are specific to what were those GI symptoms that might have triggered your seeking follow-up on this. So Thomas, I'll let you go. And then Anna, if you have more to add about what those beginning symptoms, digestive GI symptoms were.
So mine actually was a very kind of quick diagnosis. per se. So for in September of last year, I was just having a lot of GI issues, just a lot more pain and discomfort in my stomach, which, you know, having CF, a lot of that is, you know, you just think, oh yeah, I didn't take enough enzymes with what I eat, or, you know, it's just part of my CF. It's just something that'll go away eventually. But it started to slowly kind of get worse. Cause I was actually at the CFRI summer retreat, and they actually had a discussion, a webinar there about CF and the colon cancer. And throughout the whole retreat, I was just like, my stomach was not doing its best. I was still trying to, you know, push through and do all the events they had and fun activities, arts and crafts and all that fun stuff. And, you know, the following weekend, I had a family on a Saturday. I had a family picnic and, you know, was totally fine, you know, some stomach pain. And come next on that Sunday, I get to get a little gruesome. I had went to the bathroom and it was just pure blood. And I fainted, like pretty much I was able to kind of muster my way up to my bed, and then I fainted for, well, I think it was only a few seconds, and I like got some water. I immediately called my sister, who took me to the emergency room. They started to do blood tests on me and do, you know, just some basic tests. And just because I had went to the CFRI retreat, I asked them, I was just like, you know, I mentioned the colon cancer, doing a colonoscopy and stuff. And because initially they were going to send me home and just monitor me. But because I brought up, you know, that I had CF and had just learned about the colonoscopies and colon cancer being a little bit more, you know, starting to come up a lot more with patients. And so I brought that up with them, and they were very receptive. Talked to, you know, my CF team, to oncology, and, you know, a bunch of teams, and decided to go ahead and do the colonoscopy. So I, you know, I had a good, so within the day of going in, I waited probably about a day of just sitting there waiting for tests to come back. Then they came back and did, started to give me the discussion about doing a colonoscopy, risk and all that, and started the bowel prep right away. Within the next 24 hours, I did that, went down to do the colonoscopy. And then within, I think it took about 2 days for me to get at least a preliminary, you know, a basic result. And by then they had found that I had a tumor in my colon, and had then diagnosed me with stage 4 because they saw that it had spread to my liver as well. And then, you know, they, you know, had discussion. They were trying to wait for the full results to come in, because they wanted me to start. They were talking about me starting chemo right away in the hospital. But they wanted to get the full results back. So they decided to send me home. And then within, I want to say a few days, my oncology doctor called me. I came in and literally started chemo, like within a week of getting diagnosed. And this was just last year, very beginning of October. So I was 30 years old then. And then literally started within a week of getting diagnosed. I turned 31 in November of last year as well. So it was kind of a 30 going on 31. Actually had chemo on my birthday, or at least the last day of my, my chemo was a 3-day treatment. So my last day of chemo for each cycle ended up on my birthday. So that wasn't the most fun, but you know, you got to do what you got to do. So yeah, so it was a very kind of quick 2-week go in, had symptoms, went in, found out I had cancer, and then started chemo. So very, very quick 2-week kind of situation. So, but I'm glad they were able to find it. But, you know, it would have been nice to have been able to have gotten it test done sooner to maybe catch it before it got to stage 4. But they caught it and started chemo right away. So I'm happy that that happened. But yeah, so that's a kind of a quick basis of my story of, you know, how they found it in me. So
that's funny. It's like in the rare disease community where, you know, the symbol is the zebra because, you know, doctors hear hoofbeats, they think horses, you know, that whole, it's sort of the same analogy here, right? For younger people.
Yeah.
Oh, you have CF, you have these symptoms, you're young, bunk. It's just CF related. So
exactly.
So challenging. And Elise, as somebody had a lung transplant, you talked about how when your doctor really recommended early that you get the colonoscopy. Was it, remind me again, was it more about your family history? Was it after your transplant that this came up? When was your first conversation about having the colonoscopy? How old were you at that time?
So thank you, Siri, for sharing. I forgot in my introduction that I am 10 years post-transplant, which has brought up a whole new level of concern about colon cancer with the 25 to 30% higher incidence of colon cancer in individuals post-transplant. I had he called it a golf ball. I'm not sure if that's how big it actually was. A physician who we had this discussion, I would say it was a real intense one about colon cancer, was probably 10 years ago, because I was very concerned about this big polyp and how he was going to excise it and whether he was going to perforate my colon. So he ended up taking this out in pie wedges. There's the good news and bad news. Some doctors listen to you, some don't. This one said, took it out in pie wedges. So you're going to have 3 colonoscopies this year, one each quarter, to get the rest of it. Gratefully, that was benign. The message that I really want to share is this higher incidence of epithelial cell cancers, not only in those of us with CF, but also in our loved ones. And while I, as I mentioned, have not been diagnosed with colon cancer, I have had other cancers due to being immunosuppressed. And I coincidentally am having a colonoscopy next month because I still get them annually. He felt because of the number of polyps, I think I've lost count, but I was at 25. So I got those all. They seem to just grow very prolifically in our colons. And I think part of it, I mean, I eat a pretty healthy diet. I don't think it's diet related, but it's part of our CF chemistry. So he wanted me to reach out to not only my siblings, but my parents. And sadly, by the time my brother, I told my brother about it, he was actually diagnosed on his 50th birthday with stage 4 colon cancer and passed away 2 years later. And it's just absolutely devastating seeing that here is the CF individual in the family who, you know, we have our cards stacked a little bit against us. And I wish that I had been able to educate him a little bit sooner and there was more knowledge about parents and siblings for screening.
And, you know, so many cancers, you either have it or you don't, meaning, you know, nobody says, you have breast cancer, you have ovarian cancer, you have uterine, you get the news. Whereas, you know, cervical cancer typically starts as dysplasia. Colon cancer always starts as these precancerous polyps. I mean, it is the one gift with colon cancer that there is an opportunity to intervene in advance. And I guess so many people said, but the prep is so hard. And I can assure probably Thomas and Anna are like, you think that's hard? Let's try colon cancer, try chemo, try radiation, try surgery, try all these things. So we really do want to encourage people to lay aside their fears of that and really embrace the opportunity that is there. So I was wondering if each of you could kind of share what your thoughts were about having the colonoscopy and the process and what you would say to others who are nervous or hesitant. So Anna, you want to jump off?
Sure. I have been talking about colonoscopies for the last 3 days in DC. So sure. Happy to carry on. I did want to circle back on some of the digestive symptoms since folks were asking. So I had bloating. I did have blood in my stool. I was told it was hemorrhoids. multiple, like on a few occasions. I believe that because, okay, they're pretty normal. A lot of people have them. And, you know, I just was like, okay, that tracks. So mine were really just like the bloating, was like the big one, right? I just felt like this little balloon that couldn't figure out why she couldn't deflate. At one point I thought I drank too much water. I was like, maybe you need to slow down on the water. but that wasn't it. So blood in the stool, which had happened to me for the first time in like 2017. So I just want to be clear that like I lived with this cancer inside of me for a very long time and had, you know, I don't like to play this game because it's not good for your mental health. And like, this is just where I'm at now. And this is where I have to live. This is my new reality. But I had some digestive systems in 20, I want to say maybe 50, between 15 and 17. I don't totally remember. And I did a bunch of different GI tests. The one test we did not do was a colonoscopy because I was scared. Look at the irony now. Did my fear serve me? It did not. Do I tell myself that a lot? No, because I can't change it. But believe me, if that DeLorean was real, I would get in and I would smack 23-year-old Anna and be like, stop being afraid, because it could be so much worse. So I think that our own fears kind of stop us from, this is a wellness thing, right? It's about being well and staying healthy, whatever that means anymore. They're finding it in younger and younger people, regardless of CF. It is the number one cancer killer in men ages 20 to 49, and number two for women. Number one is breast cancer. Number two is colon cancer for that same age group. So as CF patients, we are even at a higher risk. And little Anna, who grew up thinking that she wouldn't even live this long, I wish I had done better for her. I wish I had been less afraid. And when someone said, you don't need that, my fear allowed me to be like, okay, cool. Because the answer was I did. Now, I don't know if those pains and symptoms had anything to do with colon cancer, to be 100% sure. But if it takes 10 years to develop into a cancer, do the math. 34, stage 4, 10 years, 24, in my 20s, you know? Nobody was clearly talking to me necessarily about getting a colonoscopy at that age, but I had all these other GI tests. And the one when they presented it a few times, now my mom will tell you, she told me I should get one back then. And I was like, nah, they said I didn't need one. Like, I'm scared. I'm not doing that. They put you to sleep and then they put things in. What are they doing back there? They're not doing anything, okay? They're doing what their job. They're doing their job. And it's the nicest nap I've ever had. The prep is hard, sure, but we've had CF. Like, please don't tell me you haven't spent days on the toilet. Okay. Don't lie. So, you know, it's a wellness check, right? And that's the mindset I'm trying to like get people to understand. It's nothing to really be afraid of. Because if they catch it early and they remove the polyps, you don't have to be me. I don't want anyone to have to be me. Like, this isn't fun. I make it fun because I have no other choice, but it's not.
And I don't know if people can't see the questions. I just do want to add in that Melissa said she wants to thank you for your bravery and sharing your stories with us. We'll get back to Claire, who wanted to know more about the CF specific prep for colonoscopy. And maybe Elise, you'll be able to take that question since you've had many colonoscopies. I do want to add, Laura has shared, small bonus after the prep and colonoscopy, my bowel movements are really good for a few days. So there, take that positive. So let's see. So before we jump to Elise to talk about the specific prep, Thomas, do you have anything you'd want to share with somebody who's hesitant to have a colonoscopy?
Not so much. I mean, For me, like it was a very, like I said, it was a very quick kind of situation. I mean, I was nervous, as you do for any kind of procedure. But they gave me, they always, anytime I go for a procedure, they always gave me or give me kind of like a medication, kind of calm your nerves. And then you're going to be knocked. Like, I know they do colonoscopies while you're awake, but you can opt to be put under. And in my case, I was put under. So, like I said, it's such a great nap. Like you go in, they do their thing, and you wake up and from a nice long nap, and well, this, I don't think it's very long, but it feels like a nice long nap. And then you just wait for results, which is probably the most fear you get is just waiting for results, and not even so much the colonoscopy itself. But getting those tests is necessary. And the fear, it subsides once you start to get those answers and to be able to hopefully even get in earlier before you have to even, if you can kind of get in before, besides to or before it gets to a cancer stage and be able to remove and do all that. But yeah, when it comes to the when it comes to the actual colonoscopy, I'd say there's nothing so much to fear about because you're knocked out and taking a nice long nap. So, yeah, it was a breeze for me, per se.
Thank you. And Elise, do you want to talk about the actual prep and how it might be different for people with CF versus general population?
I'd be happy to, since I'm getting ready to prep for one. So, I believe most of us, the prep is not just one day, which it is for the average person who does not have CF. It's often you start a week before starting to cut down on nuts and seeds and things that have any skins, for example, tomatoes or grapes. And then for me personally, mine's a 3-day, I go on clear liquids for the first day and the second day. And I will say that I've found there's ways to work around this a little bit with some white lifesavers to suck on or some clear gummy bears. I look at it as a 2 to 3 day time where you're just checking out because you're preparing for something that is very important. But I do want to kind of demystify this. It's like my family, I've been talking about colonoscopies since my children were little, and they're always like, why every night does this conversation come up? It's really important, like Anna and Thomas said, this is, and Siri, this is preventative. If you catch that one polyp, which for my brother, it was one polyp, and his feeling was, I will get my colonoscopy when I'm 50. That's when he was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. With regards to the prep, we also typically have to use more than one of the Go Lightly jugs. So I will say, I think I hold the record at Stanford for 4. It's hard to clean us out, but just sort of pace yourself. And I find it's a time to take advantage of streaming your favorite shows or if you like crafts. But ultimately, you're doing this for your longevity. And it's like I said, it's very preventative. And the beauty of this is, as we get older, all of our parts end up being parsed out, whether it's kidneys, livers, colon. The physicians, there's nothing squeamish about this. This is their job, and this is what they're there to do. And I agree with Thomas. You get the anesthesia, and before you know it, you wake up often as I do. Is it over yet? I just, beg that people take this preventative measure, and it can really save your life.
And I'll, speak for the carrier in the crowd with higher risks. And I will say I've been tested for the gene. I don't have the family gene, but both of my parents, one who was a carrier, one who was not, had precancerous polyps. And my sisters have had it. I've had precancerous polyps. And when they found the and I think I had two precancerous polyps, and they said, well, okay, so then this means you come back in 5 years for your next colonoscopy. And I was like, really? Like, can I come back next year? I mean, literally, I would get a colonoscopy every year because it is preventable. And just the knowledge, because they say once it is precancerous. It takes about 5 years to develop into a cancer. And then obviously you think of Anna and Thomas, then it just kept going, right? Growing, metastasizing, as Anna says, having just one terrible party in the body. So you think about all that time. And I really, this is what I always reflect on with, you know, you, Thomas, and you, Anna, when you think how young actually this all started for you. And if that isn't, you know, a sign to everybody, do not let young age dissuade you or convince you that it is potentially not colon cancer. So let's see, the demystifying. I'm so glad you said that, Elise, because I do want to use this opportunity to tell people in 2 weeks, we're having another webinar, and it's actually with a gastroenterologist from National Jewish Health, which is one of the largest adult CF centers in the country, Dr. Jeff King. And he is going to demystify the process and really take everybody through the prep process. And then we actually get to see like what he sees with the inside the colon. What does a polyp look like? What does it look like when the clean out wasn't, you know, completed, all those things. So I really encourage everybody to watch that as well. For you all, what message do you hope people take away from today's webinar? Shall I say, Elise, you want to go first?
I think I'm repeating myself, but my message is, I'm going to say something my grandmother used to say to me, be kind to yourself and do something that's good for yourself. It's self-care is really important, not only in the CF world, but for our loved ones as well. And in this case, as we've all said, this particular procedure can save your life. So we're hoping that you will heed the message and understand the potential uncomfortableness of going through this procedure. But we stand here as examples to reassure you that it's not a terrible procedure. And it's something that will literally save your life. There aren't a lot of cancers that you can say this about, and this is one of them.
Thomas?
One thing I would, you know, I hope people can take away from this too, is just, you know, just start having that discussion, like with your doctors, with family, friends, you know, to spread the word, to, you know, try to get more information out there, because the more information we get out there, the more action we can take to get this lowered, to do colonoscopies at a younger age, even when you're not at a higher risk, because it's so important that we can get in earlier, get these tests done to prevent and to treat, you know, all these not even just colon cancers, just cancers in general, but especially this one. So I'm really hoping that, you know, we get discussion talked about more than it has. So that way we can, like I said, get people in there, get those tests done, because they're not, you know, it's not an invasive procedure. You get put under, they do their quick test, and then, you know, and then you can start, you know, the process. If you do have it, you know, you start your process there, or if you just have polyps that you can take care of, or if there's nothing there, then, you know, so that is what I hope people can take away from this webinar.
Thank you. Anna?
Well, honestly, I hope that folks listening understand that we are at a higher risk now. I hope it empowers you to be an advocate for yourself. I couldn't save me. I've reached the top of the cancer floor elevator for colon cancer. I'm chilling up here at stage 4. But I hope that this helps you feel comfortable talking to your doctor about it, feel empowered. Don't take no for an answer, because this is your body. This is your life. You're the one that has to go through the procedure. You're the one that has to do the clean out. If you're willing to do those things to make sure you're not having to lose your hair, go through chemotherapy, and have your whole life flipped upside down, remember that. The doctor doesn't do the chemo. You do the chemo. So please, please, please advocate for yourself about getting screened earlier. even if you don't have any symptoms. I didn't develop any symptoms until it was stage four. I know there's folks asking that in there. So I didn't have any symptoms until it was a 5-alarm fire up in here. So, you know, my main symptom would have been blood and stool on occasion, which, you know, wrote off as hemorrhoids. So was that a symptom? Probably, you know, but it didn't become uncomfortable until it was stage four. It's why it's called a silent killer. So please, you know, be your own fierce advocate. Talk to your doctor about getting screened. The current screening guidelines, you know, don't say till 40, as we said, or 45 for healthy people. And that's really just, it's not sufficient. It's not. So we have to be the ones to kind of take the power back and be like, no, we are going to be advocates. I know we already have a lot on our plate, but this is so worth it. It's worth it. We're going to live longer with some of these new medications. You don't want to live longer and then get cancer. I know what that feels like, and it's not fun.
So thank you all. We do have some questions before we go. I think we have just enough time to get them taken care of, but I'll answer a couple quickly. Laura, do carriers have the typical prep as a carrier? I can tell you, yes, it seems that is enough. There's my measurement of sweat chloride, et cetera, may be higher than the general population, but the mucus doesn't seem to be an issue for carriers. The PrEP is the same as the general population. And Joanne, I'm so sorry, who lost her son to colon cancer. So the question is the sibling of a CF patient at an increased risk for colon cancer? And that would be determined by whether that sibling is a carrier. So if the sibling is a carrier, then there are twice the risks for colon cancer. Otherwise, you know, is it the family gene? Is it the diet? Is it, there could be many other factors. Lisa had a question. Has anyone reached out to the CFF to encourage them to lower the age? I'm going to turn that one over to Anna after I say that the guidelines at which the age of 40 were established, I think that was in 2018. They revisited the guidelines in 2021. At this point, they are not currently planning on revising them. They are gathering data. They are doing a clinical a study using Cologuard and CF to see if that's an early detection. But it has been shared. There's no current plan to change the age. But now I'll just turn that over to Anna. Anna, have you expressed any concerns about this?
So I reached out to the CF Foundation about 2 weeks after I got diagnosed, like once I could get a handle on what was going on and which way was up and down about lowering the guidelines. I kind of just assumed they would already be working on it since they had just done so for the general population. I figured they'd be bumping it down 10 years because it was 40, you know, 40 for us and 50 for everybody else. I kind of just assumed it would be like, okay, well, they moved it, we'll move it. As Siri just said, they have obviously not changed them since, but I don't want anyone to think for a second that I have stopped reminding them that they should be changed. So yes, we have, or at least I have personally reached out. I wrote 2 blogs for them to try and help raise awareness. And that's kind of why we're doing some of the things we're doing with the webinars and trying to, you know, educate more folks, right? One of the things that I was told when I had reached out to them, it was more about when we see more patients getting screened at a younger age, we can readjust the guidelines then. And I was very confused because I wasn't really sure who's signing up for colonoscopy because they're bored. But I took that as a call to action to mean that change would only happen from the bottom up. And yes, the pun is very much intended. So if more of us are getting screened earlier, that might actually move the needle. But, you know, we shouldn't have to wait for their guidelines to change, right? Some of the doctors and stuff, folks' mindsets are changing around this. So don't feel like just because the guidelines say 40, you should have to wait to 40. So that's why I was hoping we can try and empower you to be, you know, an advocate for you. Just because something says this is when you should do it doesn't mean you can't do it earlier or shouldn't do it earlier.
And I will say, I mean, Thomas, that was just such a great example of the power of, you know, a bit of information when you were in the emergency department and you said, I just heard about this and they listened to you and you self-advocated. So,
I mean, because they were literally going to send me home and just to monitor me. So if I didn't mention anything, I would have probably, you know, bled out more or had worse symptoms at home or, you know, would have had to do a way worse kind of surgery or something. I don't even know. So I'm glad that I was able to talk to them and that they listened to me and that they went ahead and did the test. So, yeah.
And CFRI has developed basically a one sheet, a fact sheet on CF and colon cancer. It's available in English and Spanish. It's on our website for download. We also have printed copies. We're happy to mail out to people if they want to bring them with them to their clinic visit. We can hope that, you know, as there's more data collected, I will say I spoke with somebody recently, said, well, the problem is like people are very hesitant to have them. So even if we lower the age, how many people are going to go? And like, again, this is all about educating people to get over the fear. In the meantime, if the recommended age, we would love it to be younger for the obvious reason that it will save lives. Let's just go with that. But the other part of it is, you know, it makes it a little easier quite often with insurance issues if it's part of the standard of care. With that saying, we're encouraging everybody, if you're having some kind of symptoms and you push to have a colonoscopy, obviously we would tell everybody, check to make sure, you know, what is the, we have been told that if it is something outside of CF, it is a medically necessary screening. And so therefore it should be covered. But of course we would remind everybody to always check to see what, you know, coverage is, et cetera. In advance, we don't want everybody later to say, oh, CFRI told me, and now I have this huge medical debt. But it is up, it's incumbent upon us to be going to have them, to advocate for ourselves. And yes, the bottoms up, Anna, is absolutely true. And we can hope that in the end, there's a merging of the two. It will be a standard of care, more people will be screened and more lives will be saved. And let's see, I know we're out of time, but I just want one last question from Jennifer. Did Anna or Thomas notice any changes in eating before diagnosis? She'd had a malignant polyp removed 6 months ago. And she definitely felt a change in her eating habits. You know, this chronic constipation that many people know about, blood in the stool. So now she's going for a follow-up colonoscopy. But did you see any changes in your eating, your appetite, your...
For me, I don't recall having any kind of difference in my eating. I feel like I was just eating fairly normal, to how I normally eat. For me, it was just kind of very, you know, the only symptom I had really was the cramping or stomach pain. And then obviously like the bleeding that I had. When it came to eating, I pretty much was eating normal. So anything and everything that I can. But that was just, you know, for me, but.
I might've had some eating habit changes because I felt so bloated and was very confused. So I felt like full, like I said, I thought maybe I drank too much, you know, because if you drink a lot of water, sometimes you're not as hungry either. So I might've had some eating side effects or changes in appetite before being diagnosed. But you know, didn't necessarily always pick up on that, like as like a thing. I was just thought, you know, I was full of water or something. I wasn't sure. I was full of something, that's for sure, but it wasn't water. But you know, so I can't totally say yes, but I would assume probably, right? Because of feeling so full and so bloated and all those things, right? That you're not as hungry when you feel that way.
And let's see, another question for Elise. Are you able to dictate how often you have colonoscopies, or is it a, you know, set protocol at your center, how often you have them?
So that I was also given a 5-year reprieve after my last one, and I was not comfortable with that. So I basically told that I wanted to be on a 3-year protocol. And both the transplant team and the GI team were supportive of that based on family history. I don't know what would have happened if it hadn't been the situation with my brother. I did want to say with my brother, he didn't have digestive pain. He actually had upper back pain, and that was because the cancer had already spread to his thoracic spine. So not to make everybody a bunch of hypochondriacs, but I think when you have something that's not normal and you have other complex medical issues, though he did not have other issues, he was very healthy, we need to get things checked out. It's just, our systems are different, and there's a lot of things that can be developed, and then they can hopefully be caught earlier. And I applaud Anna. The word I always use, we have to advocate for ourselves and maybe get a little bit obnoxious about it, because we're fighting for our lives. And with between Trikafta helping individuals live longer lives, you know, you don't want to get knocked out by this. I felt that way with transplant, and then I've had a different type of cancer, but you don't want that to get you. You don't want anything to get you. So you just have to recognize if there's lumps or pain or blood, those are red flags, and follow up on them and be assertive. And I applaud Thomas, you know, suggest tests, because I think doctors have this attitude of, if it doesn't hurt, we won't fix it. But if you put that idea in their head, they will say, sure, if that's what you want, we'll order it for you. And unfortunately, when you order tests these days, you find things. So, but you otherwise wouldn't, you know, would have, as Tom said, gotten a lot worse if things are not addressed sooner than later. So I, right now, to answer your question, Siri, I was doing them annually for many years. Now I'm doing it every 3 years. With transplant, you have annual tests that you have to do, but they seem to be, if you have no polyps, they seem to push you out to 5 years, but I'll never be comfortable with that length of time.
So self-advocacy is key. It's absolutely key. And I just am so grateful to you, Elise, and to Thomas, to Anna, for coming here and sharing your personal stories. And really, you are making a difference for many others. And I'm grateful to everybody who came today. This is just the beginning. This is not a one-off of awareness raising. We are fully committed to keeping the drumbeat going. Self-advocacy, do not mistake your CFGI symptoms as just, don't write off GI symptoms that have changed as part of your CF. Educate your doctors. We need to spread the word. So I thank you all so much for being here. I wish you all good health. Thank you.